Welcome to today's coffee break, everyone. It is the 30th of March, 2020. BP9, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you. How about you?
Very good. I'm just about ready to have March finished.
Yeah, I heard that. I so heard that.
Yeah. It's interesting because, like, I just feel like April is going to be such a time of refreshing because I'm going to be handing in my keys to the old studio tomorrow, yeah. Pulling the antenna off the roof tonight, and then it's all just unpacking, getting set up. Yeah. So it's like we're now going to be moving into an exciting time for the studio.
Yeah. Now, you're not planning to start your netcast again until 22nd? Is that what I heard? Is that how I understand it?
22nd is the plan. So, okay. And for those who are wondering, what on earth are you talking about? We have 24 hours remaining for our Kickstarter campaign. So this was initially to ensure that Category 5 didn't go out of business because we got an eviction notice at the end, well, this time last month. So it's been, a month and a day. So here we are four and a half weeks later, and we're already moved. All our stuff is out. So so now any funds that are raised are going to be going toward, I've hired a contractor, and he's going to be basically doing the renovations for us. And it's going to be, we're taking Category 5. I mean, it's an opportunity that I had I was forced to take. But now it's like, okay, let's do it right. Let's not move into a box and just put our desk in front of a plain wall again. So I've got a contractor who's going to come and do some work. I think that's going to be really, really awesome. So that's what we're raising funds for right now. We've got 24 hours. If we are able to raise another $2,100, then we're going to be getting a 360 camera. So our virtual tour, all that kind of stuff can be filmed in virtual reality. So you guys will be able to put on a headset and kind of look around as we give you the tour. So that would be amazing. I want to shoot, when we shoot Jeff with paintballs as well, I think it'd be fun to shoot that in VR video so that you can watch.
That's going to be so much fun. And I'm sorry, Jeff, I don't know if you're listening, but let me say, I'm sorry.
I am not sorry. You know what, though? I'm so thankful for him. I mean,
He's putting up with a lot.
And you know, bless his heart, he's doing this to support the show, and it's just such an incredible thing. So, and I don't think I could take the pain. So,
well, we haven't figured out if he can either. We'll see what happens.
We'll see. I think we're gonna do the paintball and the pregnancy simulation on two separate days.
Oh, you weren't gonna do it on the same day?
Could you imagine? Well, we're gonna shoot him with 500 paintballs while he's hooked up to a TENS machine.
Oh yeah.
Where's it hurt now, Jeff?
Sasha, get him again.
I'm looking forward to April. Yeah.
Can we talk about Sasha's move, or should she be in the conference for that? I think I heard she was delayed or so. I'm not sure what the deal is there.
Yeah, I'm not really. She'd be the one to ask about that. I mean, I'm happy to answer any questions that I know the answer to. But to be honest, BP9, that whole thing has been like a shock for all of us, right? Mm-hmm. So I think we all kind of had a sense that Sasha was going to be, you know, she went to school to be a personal support care worker, and and we knew that her father-in-law was in need of that kind of care. So inevitably she was going to be moving, but what the whole pandemic thing did is it made it so that, okay, we really need to get out there now.
Yeah.
But then they closed down the borders. So all that I know is that, okay, you know, it's been a roller coaster ride for everyone, and them included, but to learn that she's suddenly going to be leaving right away, but then learning that she can't because the borders are closed. Mm-hmm. So Doug, can I trouble you to turn off the vibration on your phone, just because that grabs the camera every time? So.
Not permanently for Sasha. She's permanently gone. Sasha permanently gone to look after her father-in-law on a permanent basis.
I would expect so, Peter. So what we're going to do, and Peter's question is whether or not Sasha is going to be returning to us or if she's going to be permanently out there caring for him. I think it's going to be a permanent situation. So what we've done, we don't have, I guess what you'd say, an official plan of attack just yet, because again, this all has happened so quickly. But what I have done... what I have done is I've gotten Sasha a Bluetooth headset exactly the same as mine for when I do vlogs, so that she has better sound quality when she's filming on her phone. We've also talked about getting her a tripod for her phone, and she's talked with her husband, and they've decided that they will be able to set up a bit of a small studio in their home in Newfoundland. So the plan there is that even though she can't physically be here with us, it's going to change things, and we all know that, you know, things are going...
In Canada, Robbie, or USA?
In Canada. So the thing is, like, we all know, like, things were going to change with Studio E anyways. We're already looking at restructuring how the show is going to be, and because we're making it better and better, right? So we're already thinking about how can we do things a little differently, a little more professionally. And this threw a real monkey wrench into that, because now it's like, okay, well, how can we now still include Sasha? So we're working on ways that from a remote location through her phone, because her phone seems to work really well for this, with the headset, with a tripod, with maybe a backdrop behind her, we're going to do something. We're just not sure exactly how it's going to be structured just yet.
And how is her internet situation going to be there?
That's another unsure, right? Like, yeah. We don't know yet. So,
because it's pretty remote, so
yeah. So here's hoping they've got something, because I don't think our ubiquity will reach that far.
Stringing fiber to Newfoundland and see what happens, right?
Look, just I'm going to put this spool in the back of your truck. I want
there you
to
go.
Just kind of roll out as you drive.
I'll hold on to this end. You just drive.
3,000 meters of coax. 3,000 meters of coax.
Yes, exactly.
There you go. Yep.
I think it'd be more than 3,000 meters, though. I'll tell you.
Just a little. Just a little. Yeah. Yep. Yep. Well, I stayed up way too late last night.
Oh yeah,
studying up on the Pine Time, the wearable.
Are you still
watch?
You didn't get it yet, so you're sitting there.
It hasn't arrived yet.
So you're like
I've
reading
ordered
up
it.
On
I
it,
know it's
planning.
On its way. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
And very it's very interesting to see the. It looks to me like, and I've sort of touched on this before, Robbie,
yeah.
It looks to me like you load one image that has one program in it. It starts, you can do this with C or Rust or whatever you want to use. I like C because I am much more familiar with C than I am with C++ or Rust. So... I'm not going to try Rust. I'm going to just do it with C. It's the same approach I did with the Arduino, and I'm going to study up more on the actual hardware that's included, especially the display, because it's weird when you look at the existing implementations that are out there on GitHub or GitLab. It's GitHub. It seems like a lot of the developers have taken the approach of drawing or rather displaying a graphical image on the watch face. And I don't understand why they've done that. I think that you can drive the thing like a regular graphics tablet, you know, like a regular with vector graphics, right? I would imagine that would be just a little more efficient than you know, taking a PNG, converting it to a C header with a bunch of hex numbers in it, flattening that on the screen.
Might be a bit slow.
The vector will be slow?
No, I think the PNG conversion will be slow.
Yeah, but you only do the conversion once, though, right? So once you've done the conversion, now you've got the header file, but it's fixed. You can't change it after that. You can only display it.
Is it like an animated sprite?
No, it is just a single PNG, and you just splat it up on the screen. At least that's how I see it. It looks
so
like
in order to know what time it is, you have to reflash every 1 minute.
I think that, well, that's the part that I'm still trying to figure out. I think that there are literally PNG images of each of the arms of the watch, you know, the larger, and you literally move it around the clock face, right? That's apparently the way it works. But
so it's analog.
It's a graphics object that you have to redraw each time. I just can't help thinking that a vector implementation would probably be faster. Hmm. You start with that spot in the middle and you just go ahead.
I can't wait to see what you come up with, BP9.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I've got more studying to do yet, more late nights. Now I'm pretty useless today, but don't tell about work.
Have you seen that, Robbie? Sorry, wrong way around.
What one's that?
It's a component test, so it tested inductors, resistors, and capacitors from 1 up to many UF, 1 UF to 1 microhenry up to Henry's, and ohms from 1 ohm to 10 million ohms. 80 quid. I use it for measuring capacitors and inductors to get the right values all the time, because sometimes the values come off the box. It's pay 80 quid and you just plug in the device, you press the button and it gives you a display. It's got a pick inside it. It's made on Amazon. It's quite a useful toy. It's about 3% accuracy on it covers inductance, resistance, capacitance, and say you have a very large bridge, which you have to keep setting up. You know, just press one button thing.
I'm not clear on.
Did you catch that, BP9?
No, I'm not clear on what it's measuring.
I'm gonna actually.
I think it's a measuring device of some sort.
That's what it sounded like. So what? Can you hold the device up for me again, Peter? I'm just gonna do a quick Google search for it.
Yeah.
Just hold it back a bit for me so I can see the name. It says Atlas LCR Geek. Capacitor testing. Oh, okay. Resistance, capacitance, that kind of thing?
Yeah, and inductance.
Oh, right. It says it's a passive component analyzer.
Yeah.
Cool. It says BP9, it automatically identifies and analyzes almost all passive components, inductors, capacitors, resistors, measures its parameters using automatically selected test frequencies. So I guess, Peter, you must be really like way, way, way ahead of me when it comes to like creating circuits and things like that. Like, I'm just so.
I was an electronics engineer for a very long time. I've built up now for people. I'm building trains at the moment for a friend of mine who's got model trains. I'm building. It's got me, roped me into it, a colleague of mine. I'm doing that at the moment, but I use that for testing if components are correct, you know, they haven't got good spec or anything, you know, especially capacitors, way wee ones, bigger fried ones, you know, to check if they're okay.
Peter, the component has to be outside of the circuit for you to be able to test it properly, right? You can't test the component in the circuit, can you?
You have to take one end off. Take one end off the circuit and then clip it on.
Got it. Because otherwise the circuit would impact your reading, correct?
Yeah. You would get full 3D, say with a meter, ABO or meter, or, you know, you get the same effect. Yeah. But it's useful for testing components, make sure components are what they are, because I have a lot of components in a jump box, and over the time the labels come off. So you have to work out what they are again.
I've done some hardware work. I'm not into building. I discovered early on that I'm much more into the software than I am the hardware. So, but the Arduino is, you know, and similar single board computers have sort of changed that a little bit for me. I still don't do builds necessarily. I'm quite happy to build the Raspberry Pi hats or the Arduino shields. I'll solder those puppies together, no problem at all. I have no worries with that. But I certainly do prefer to do software. So
I tend to do a bit of both, but I'm better than that, trying to, because I was a bit late in the computing business. You know, I did it when I was about 14. No, I was 3. So it's been, you know, I was late in life to do it. Have you ever seen a package called Lazarus, Pascal Lazarus, that runs on Linux, Windows, etc., etc.?
You said Pascal?
Yeah.
Okay. I've not seen Lazarus, but I am familiar with Turbo Pascal on CPM.
Look it up on Google. Put Lazarus
in. I'll do it. Okay.
Free software, and it's very good. It runs on Windows and
and that lets you build Pascal programs.
Yeah,
under Linux.
Yeah, I built a design program for it that works out the pieces of antennas and things, so you can match them with different configurations and things.
I've done some Pascal work, but I prefer C for.
I did C at university. Yeah, okay. But I haven't done it for a long time. I can't afford the compiler. That's a problem.
Well, on Linux, the compiler's free, so that's no problem. So are the libraries that let you do all the work. As I said, I think yesterday I may have mentioned it. I built a program in C that uses GTK for the graphical UI elements and uses SQLite for the database, and that's been running for years. I built that. I tried all kinds of different graphic UI toolkits, and I finally settled on GTK. That seemed to work really well for me. So. That's the three things that I've found tend to contribute to the recipe of success for me. You know, when I'm off to build something, I will typically default to C. If I need a database, I'll typically default to SQLite. And if I need a UI, a graphical UI component, then I'll typically default to GTK. The beauty of that is it will compile and build on Windows just as easily as it does on Linux, and it looks and works with the native tool set.
Sorry, Lazarus will work on Linux and Windows as well.
Very good. What sort of libraries do you get with the Pascal compiler?
You get graphics, everything with it.
Good.
It's been running for years. It's a free. Software, you know, it's no license on it, and I update you every 6 or 7 months, I think, and you go and load it. My niece was into, she just left university, a mathematician, my brother's kid, and she used it, and she did the bother a degree on it as well. I conned her into doing it. She did it, though. It's quite useful. The other thing I wanted to show you was it's a program for doing electronics. You know, you can put components on the board and connect them up, and it designs components. You can design your own components for batteries and things. And it's not just a toy one. It's actually a full package, and that's free as well. It's called Micro Cap 12, and that's free as well. I'll find out the actual the web link again, but I've got the actual the files which people can get off of me or copy on me, because it's free anyway. I can show it to you. I can set up on the Lynx computer. I've got it on a Lynx computer working through through Wine.
Did you say it was called MicroCAD?
MicroCAP, C-A-P. Cap. I sent it to you by disk once, good Robbie. It must have got lost in the post somewhere. About Micro C-A-P as well. MicroCAP.
First link I clicked on says it's a dead link, so I'm looking for it. There's a MicroCAP Wikipedia page. Maybe that would help me find it.
It's MicroCAP dash C, big C.
Says it's a digital analog circuit simulator.
But it
looks like they've gone out of business.
Oh, well, I still got the software if you want to distribute it through CAP fiber. I've still got the setup files.
Cool. Spectrum software closed down, and MicroCAP was released free to everyone.
That's right, because it was a lot of money that was often
I see. So what happened with it is that it used to be a commercial software, but then when the company went out of business, they gave it away for free.
Yeah, and it's very good. And it's the full thing, Robbie. Everything's there. All the components are there. And then numbers as well.
I'd love to get into that. There are companies, Peter, that you can pay just a couple of bucks and send them your drawings, and they'll actually create, like they'll print the circuit boards for you.
And I got ripped off by a company in England. I can't do any PCB stuff anymore because of this, you know. And I got ripped off, so I wasn't very particularly happy. And Jim's looking, my colleague I went to university with, is looking for him as well for his trains.
I wonder if it's less likely to get ripped off now because there are so many reputable companies that are like known and respected, and because the maker community is so large nowadays.
Well, you
can get in. You can just say like, "What's a reputable circuit board printer company?" and you'll get.
This was about 6 months ago.
Was it?
Yeah.
How many? Wow. Okay. I'll keep that in mind to be careful.
I've used companies like Oshpark for printed circuit board printing, and it's worked really well. I built some what they call Trackwinos, which are you use the Arduino as the base. This is a shield that goes on top that takes a GPS module, and the idea is that once the GPS locks, then that shield actually contains a 2-meter transmitter that you can use to transmit your position via APRS. This is ham radio stuff. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I'm good.
Yeah, so am I.
I've got a full license. I've got a big 7 element outside on HF.
Nice.
Sitting down at the moment. I've been fixed up. Well, I've seen Mervyn again. Yeah, I think Jim, I think Bobby knows who I mean by Mervyn.
Peter's a hit on ham radio.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, I bet he is. Yeah. My dipole has come out of the tree, so I need to do something about hanging it back up there. Had the new roof put on the house.
Sorry, the only thing I've got now, BP9, is a long wire. The Wyndham, which is I've got a piece of land, and it's a very long Wyndham. Mm-hmm. It's about 300 feet long. It works quite well.
Yeah, I need to get back on HF. I haven't done that in a while. So.
Yeah, HF is dead at the moment. Studs are coming up at the moment. I'm waiting until it gets above about 17 megs, and then I'll go back on again.
is there no propagation at all, or is it literally?
It's been flat for a very long time. We've had minimum. It's been really bad.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well. Okay. It normally cycles over like 4 or 5 years. Has it not been improving over time or no?
It didn't improve. It just went stuck at zero all the time. And the MREP didn't rise above anything really any good. Demex wasn't even good either.
So you're not hearing any of the beacons?
No, nothing.
Wow. Okay. To let you know, Robbie, what happens in the ham radio world is that there are beacons that transmit on certain frequencies in each of the ham radio bands, so that, you know, they transmit all around the world. They're located all over the world. You can use those to judge what the propagation is like from that location and hopefully what it would be like elsewhere. But sounds like they have not been even the conditions are not good even to hear the beacons, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
Well, I've got the IBB9 again. I've got a FR100, and I wrote a Pascal program that I can run it remote from any computer anywhere in the world.
That's cool.
Nice.
I was thinking about that just the other day. I thought, wouldn't it be neat to have a remote, like I was thinking in terms of a walkie-talkie, right? So that like you guys could actually like go on your computer and like send a signal to my walkie-talkie.
That already happens.
It reminds me of it.
We can already do that. IRLM, I think it's called, or Echolink is another one. Where what you do is if you can reach a repeater that is Echolink or IRLM enabled, you can send the DTMF tones to enable the link from your repeater to the one in Barrie, Ontario, or the one in Ireland, right? Mm-hmm. That uses the internet to interlink the two repeaters, and then anything you hear on one repeater gets retransmitted on the other. And so that's you can cool. literally talk to each other over the internet.
I used to run it at one time over here, but the people took abused it, and I had to shut it down.
Yeah,
that's too bad.
That's unfortunate.
I wonder if maybe setting up a private one would be a fun project.
You have to be careful about that, because as the ham radio regulations say, you cannot send anything encrypted over the airwaves. It has to be legible. Right. It's got to be open. Yeah.
If the transmitter and receiver was just like on a user band in Barrie, say, where only like three people in all of the city use walkie-talkies, I think in terms of walkie-talkies, not ham radio, right? You guys are dealing with truckers.
Same thing.
And everything else, right?
I mean, well, even walkie-talkies are ham radio rigs.
Sort of.
I mean, they definitely are, because it depends on what frequency they can talk on, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're on the 2 meter or what's called 2 meter or 440 band, 70 centimeter band, then, you know, you're on the ham radio band. You need a license to do that, but pretty easy to get a license these days.
Well, let's pick up that conversation again tomorrow, because I want to know more.
Okay.
Thanks, everybody, for joining me for the coffee break today. I got to get back to work. It's time. Nice to see everybody, and hope that you have a wonderful afternoon. Take care.
Thanks, Robbie. Enjoyed it, man. Thank you. See you later.